Blog Talk Radio.
What I'd like to have right now is for all you fat, out of shape, Sud City sweat hogs, keep the noise down while I show your ladies what a real fantasy football guy sounds like. That's right, it's Rick Goreski, the Mad Dog, King for a Day and Friends podcast is kicking off here. I've got part two of our big episode. Let me turn down the wrestling in the background here. A little tribute to Rick Rude. Gotta love the Ravishing One. Today I'd like to kick off the show, part two of the King for a Day podcast research resources and player ranking talk. And yesterday we talked a little bit about all the different types of websites and podcasts and ways that guys can stay connected to information, even if they don't have a lot of time. Different sources to get your fantasy football knowledge. And I also talked a little bit about a lesson that I had learned, pardon me, about, you know, trying to pay attention to not just the news that they're giving you, but how they're giving you that news at these different websites or publications, magazines that you're picking up. And it occurred to me last night, several more just comments that I want to make about part one. And that has to do with another thing that happened to me that I learned the hard way, was I pay attention to where the guys that you're listening to, whether it be a magazine or a website, pay attention to where they're based. Actually, try to look up and see or listen if you're able to see any podcasts, or just try to figure out, Google it, figure out where they're based, because a lot of times the people that you're listening to are influenced, like all of us, by the local news and the ability to gain information or maybe even be a fan of their local teams. And that website that I was talking about previously in part one, where I kind of realized that they were leading me down the wrong road, in part because they had invested so much in making certain players as their breakout players and things like that. Another bias that I had picked up over time was that one of the two main guys was from the Tennessee area. So he was always talking up the Titans. And it didn't occur to me until later that, well, that would explain that. You know, he's around the Titans more. He sees more publications about it. I know I had talked about football guys a lot. And you get the same thing there. I mean, everybody does this. It's subconscious. But the guy who is, I mentioned, he works out of ESPN Radio out in Denver. That guy is, he's a Broncos shill. I mean, he talks about the Broncos all the time, and you got to take some of that with a grain of salt. You know, you learn that he has a built-in Broncos bias. I mean, there's another guy who goes on the show on the defensive side, and he's from the Cincinnati area, and he's always talking about the Bengals. You know, I remember a long time ago I got a little hung up on taking some of the Bengal linebackers like Ray Mayaluga, and you just have to be aware of that. So that's another tip that I wanted to throw out there for everybody, is to even pay attention to where these different sources are coming from where they publish, where's their home location. Another reason why I like football guys, because they have, you know, there's got to be like a dozen different guys writing for them. There is no one single bias that is going to override the entire site. But enough of that. Today, kind of wanted to segue into the strategic components of fantasy football, and specifically draft prep. How, you know, there are many ways that an owner can prepare for a draft. You can take a generic ranking out of a magazine. You can make your own ranking. You can type your league info into a website or a fantasy football service and generate lists that are specific to your league. Amongst all the choices, there's one that I personally swear by, and that is the method of tiering players. I've been setting tiers for my players since the turn of the century, and I really don't know a better way to help an owner make decisions during a draft than to tier your players. And what I wanted to do is talk a little bit about what I do, how I prepare. You know, it's not like it's a trade secret. I mean, tiers are out there. I feel I was using them, you know, a little earlier than the masses caught on. I'm in no way saying that I was one of the first people ever to use it or anything like that. I just, it was something that worked for me, and I, you know, stumbled into it and made it work, and now I've seen many articles written, and a lot of people use it for judging fantasy talent. But here's what I do. Every year, I open up a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet, and I get my hands on a current depth chart for each NFL team. And you can even do this, frankly, I normally don't have time to do that until July or August, but every now and then I'll get the opportunity in April, May, June to do that. And it's time well spent, because then you get to spend the rest of the summer tweaking it. But back on track, I'll start with the quarterbacks. And I'll go team by team, identifying the starters and the key backups for each team. So I'm not writing down everything. I'm not writing down some team's third-string quarterback. I'm writing down, like, for New England, it's Tom Brady and Garoppolo. I'm writing down for the Packers, it's going to be Aaron Rodgers and, it eludes me right now, the guy's name. Anyway, you can make fun of me later for forgetting that, but I think you're catching the drift. Indianapolis, Andrew Luck. I think Matt Hasselbeck is over there. And I write down the main players, the main quarterbacks, and the key backups, the backups that, you know, just kind of like the main backup for each player. And then what I do is I go back in. And in a second column, so I got all 32 teams worth of quarterbacks, and I've got the backups that are worth anything. And then if there's any position battles, I write down all the guys that are involved in the quarterback battle. Then in a second column, I start to cut and paste the names of the players from the first column. I start to grab the players that I think are worth more. So I'm grabbing Andrew Luck, and I'm pushing him up to the very top row. And I'm grabbing Aaron Rodgers, and I'm putting him up to the top row. I'm not worried about trying to specifically rank whether Rodgers is better than Luck. I know they're both the top-notch quarterbacks that you could have right now. So they're both going to the top. And I continue to do that. You know, for example, again, Aaron Rodgers and Andrew Luck, I pull their names to the top, and then I keep moving the names around with the better guys getting pushed up and the lesser guys getting pushed down. So I'm going to take, you know, I'm actually, while we're on here, I'm just going to click open so that I can use some actual names here while we're talking. This won't take but 1 second. So, wonderful thing about live radio. Let's see here. So I'm going to take Russell Wilson and Tony Romo, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and I'm going to be pushing these guys up to the top of the quarterback list. And what I'm naturally going to start to do here is I'm going to start to look for differences between the players that present a drop or a rise in production. So, for example, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Russell Wilson are in the top 12 of my rankings, but I think that Rodgers and Luck are by far better than Manning, Brady, and Wilson. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a space between the Luck Rodgers tier and the Manning Brady Wilson tier. I'm going to add a line between the two. And it's kind of a visual separator. I've just created a tier. Luck and Rodgers are in my top tier. And now I've got a tier below them with Manning, Brady, and Russell Wilson. And if I felt that Wilson was better than Brady and Manning, well, then I would add a line in between Wilson and Brady and Manning, and now I've got a third tier. And then I go through and, you know, I continue the exercise until I exhaust all my quarterbacks. And when I'm done, maybe the Wilson tier is going to also have Tony Romo and Matt Ryan. You know, Manning and Brady might include Matt Stafford. I'm just throwing names off the top of my head here. But, you know, the point is that I create as many tiers as I feel are needed with the idea that the tier, the space between the players listed, is going to represent a drop in production. Grouping the players together so that when I draft, I can see where I feel the drop-offs are in production. So I, like I said, I do a separate column after I put all these, you know, key starters from, you know, the top guys all the way down to the guys that I'd rather not even touch, guys like whoever's going to start in Cleveland or for the Jets. You know, those guys will be down at the bottom of my tier. They'll be in the bottom tier. And then I'll have a second category where I list the top backups. So in this top backup section, what I'm going to be doing is taking the best backup quarterbacks that if they were to possibly get some playing time due to injury, or maybe if the quarterback in front of them falters and they get a chance, that they could really be worth something. So, you know, you got a Brock Osweiler over in Denver who, you know, that guy's kind of waiting to get his chance. He would be a guy that I would have on that backup list. And I'm not going to rank that necessarily. That's more putting those names down so that, you know, if you get to the point in a draft where you want to take a flyer on somebody, or if you're during the regular season, you can glance at this list and you can see who the top backups were, and you're aware of those names and you're kind of keeping them in the back of your mind for later. I do this same thing for running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, place kickers, even on defense. You know, your defensive line, linebacker, defensive backs. I go through, again, using the same thing with the grab a depth chart, and I write down the key players. I'm not writing down guys that I don't even think are going to hit the field or are just not worth time or, you know, anything like that. I'm just writing down the key players, and then I'm grabbing those key players, and I'm just grabbing them and pasting them over, grabbing them into an empty column, and I'm just putting those names out there, and I'm creating spaces where I think there's going to be a drop between, you know, a difference in performance between the talent. And then after you separate them out, then you go in and you fine-tune it. You know, like I was talking about the quarterback tier with Luck and Rodgers at the top. Well, I would go back and I would decide, you know, do I think Rodgers is better than Luck? Do I think Luck is better than Rodgers? I would then go through and I would rank those guys a little bit more, you know, micro. But the goal in the beginning is to just lay those guys out in more of a macro format and, you know, group the guys together that I think are roughly of the same nature, that there's not that much difference between them. And then what you do is you go in and you, you know, move those shelves around and, you know, within that little group of guys, I think I'd rather have Brady than Manning, or I think I'd definitely rather have Wilson over Brady or Manning, so I'm going to put Wilson at the top of that, and, you know, I'll put Matt Ryan ahead of maybe ahead of Peyton Manning, and Stafford below Peyton Manning. However you do it, yeah, I hope you're getting the idea of what I'm talking about. You do the same thing with running backs. Like I said, you can move a guy like Adrian Peterson up to the top. You could put, you know, Jamal Charles right next to him. You could have a space down and then Marshawn Lynch. You could have Eddie Lacy there. Again, just throwing stuff off the top of my head. But, you know, wide receivers, you do the same thing. You got all your really good wide receivers, and it's amazing when you do this. You have kind of a clear-cut ranking of players at each position. And those rankings are sorted from the top to bottom with built-in spacing that separates where the value changes from one grouping of players to the other. And the benefit of doing this is that it comes into play while you're drafting. Because just because a guy is in your second tier doesn't mean you're automatically going to draft that guy early. You may value a player more than the consensus of the other players and the owners in the league value that player. So what the tier system allows you to do is to identify where the talent you like is trending as the draft is unfolding. And I hope you catch the nuance of what I just mentioned there, is that you're tiering these players the way that you like them, the way that you think that their performance performance is going to play out and who you think is better than the next guy. And then you're putting those gaps in between the tiers so that when on draft day you've got this sheet in front of you and you can immediately see that, you know, there's only one quarterback left in the top three tiers and you need a quarterback. And there's four guys left in the fourth tier. And you can decide for yourself, am I comfortable with any of these guys in the fourth tier? If not, then you know you need to make a priority grab on that quarterback that's left. You can see where the talent is trending while you draft, while it's unfolding. You can look across positions and ask yourself if you should pick a running back from your fifth tier or a top-tier wide receiver or tight end. And I just find it to work so well in helping you make decisions while you're drafting, because it's a way of kind of, you know, all positions are different, but this is kind of an apples-to-apples way of taking a look at what's there with the talent that you laid out there and being able to see if there's a guy that you're sold on. If you're sold on Allen Robinson from the Jaguars, you know, you can wait on him. It also works for defensive players too, but again, I only write down the impact players on defense. I don't type every name. You know, same thing for wide receivers. Some teams have three viable wide receivers, while others barely have one wide receiver that you can count on. So you just adjust that as you gather the player info off the depth charts, and it's all based on your taste. So a key to remember is that your tier represents what you like and not what you think will happen. Like I said, guys make mistakes, in my opinion, in setting up lists that reflect the consensus of where players are going to go or where they're supposed to go, as opposed to where they think, what they think about players. And it's important to have an idea of where consensus says a player will go. But you, as the person drafting, need to have a firm grasp on what you feel a particular player is worth. You can't let just, you know, because average draft position says that Jason Randall is going in the seventh round, doesn't mean that you wait for the seventh round. You know, maybe you pick him in the fifth round. It also doesn't mean, if you're not that fond of Randall, it doesn't mean that you go in and you pick Randall because it's the seventh round and that's where Randall's supposed to go. Well, if you're not really that fond of him, why take him? You know, go take a different guy. So back to Allen Robinson. You may have a feeling that Allen Robinson of Jacksonville is going to finish in the top 15 at wide receiver. And Robinson is currently the 35th wide receiver going off the board per consensus average draft position charts. So you want to see Robinson on your tiered sheets as being in the upper tiers so that while you're drafting, you know that you have a top 15 player in your pocket sitting there. It stands right out. Believe me, when you're drafting and you're crossing those names off, and many of those names are going to align with average draft position. I mean, Adrian Peterson's going to go early in all drafts. Calvin Johnson's going to be an earlier pick in all drafts. And Dez Bryant, I mean, these are all no-brainers. But when you get a guy like Allen Robinson, a guy that maybe you believe in, you think he's going to be top 15, that guy's not going early. So by having him in your early tiers, and then as you're crossing the names out, there's going to be this guy. There's going to be this, you know, this little spot that you constantly see, and you're like, wow, I got that hanging there. You know, I can get that one. Whenever I want to go in and get that, I can make the move on it. And the point that I'm really making is just because the guy is in the upper to middle tier doesn't mean you rush to grab him. You know, you lay back on some players knowing that per consensus ADP, the player is likely to fall further, allowing you the peace of mind to say that you'll load up at a different position and then swoop in and grab Robinson at some point to fill your wide receiver need. The freedom that this allows you as a drafter is fantastic. You get to see where the key players in your mind at each position are at any given time. And you get to see the drop-off ramifications of choosing one position over another. So you get to see what will happen if you pass over the last starting running back left on your board to take a second-tier tight end, and it helps you make that decision. And more importantly, you'll see the ramifications of taking the top-tier linebacker over the last running back that's left. You'll see that this is maybe the last running back that you feel comfortable starting. And then you can ask yourself, if you really want to take a linebacker, when there's five linebackers left that you'd feel just fine putting into your lineup, compared to only having one running back left that you could count on. For me, I try to do my tiers in early to mid-August. Excuse me. I try to do my tiers by early to mid-August. And then I like to tweak the tiers all the way up through to the night of the draft. And I have to confess that there's been plenty of times where, you know, I'm working late into the night leading into the King for a Day draft. You know, it's 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, probably like a lot of you. You know, I'm making my tiers at 1 o'clock in the morning, but I still do this every single year, and I feel it pays off. Even if it's 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm still sitting down, pulling those guys off the draft sheets, and because I've stayed in touch with all the football information all year round, I'm able to make at least intelligent decisions about, you know, it's not that I'm up to speed on everything. Some years I'm more up to speed than other years. Sometimes, you know, real life gets in the way, but when I do this tier thing, I always feel comfortable and I'm always able to stay in the game and be competitive with everybody else because I've got this across the board. I can't screw up every position, right? I mean, you got to feel the same way when you're doing your sheets. You got to have some things right. Just by paying attention a little bit, you know who the key players are at different positions. So if you're doing your tiers and you're able to look at your tiers from left to right, position by position, it's helping you make good decisions as opposed to, gosh, I wish I didn't make that pick, or, you know, I shouldn't have taken this guy, that was too early. You'll just feel a lot better about what you do. So I was mentioning about doing the tiers early. The earlier you can do it is better because then you can tweak your tiers through training camp. You can account for injuries, exhibition games, and so on. It's just, obviously, the earlier the better. I understand fully that it's not always possible, but you get that year when you did get to do that stuff early, and man, you walk into the draft and you just really feel in control of it. For those of you in multiple leagues, I always do the tiers with King for a Day in mind, and then I use that as my platform for other leagues. And the reason being is that King for a Day's scoring system helps you track the base value of the players, in my opinion, best. It best helps you track that base value. And what you do from there is you just tweak to the scoring systems of your other leagues. And you'd be surprised at how most of your rankings actually stay the same. You're only tweaking for, say, PPR leagues, you know, point per reception, or leagues that are heavy on yardage. There aren't giant leaps in the player rankings or tiers. You're just moving guys around a little bit here and there, taking that pass-catching running back and maybe moving them up a little bit, or maybe you're just applying, maybe you feel the same way about the wide receivers as you did before. Maybe you don't change your rankings, but you're taking your tiers that you set up, and now you're changing your decision-making process because you're putting more value on those wide receivers that catch a lot of balls than you do on, say, an Alfred Morris, who's going to get you 1,000-plus yards and, you know, 6 to 8 touchdowns minimum. But, you know, Jordy Nelson's going to outscore him like crazy. Randall Cobb's going to outscore him like crazy. You're definitely going to go pass catcher in those examples. So I think the last thing I recommend is doing a mock draft as far as how I prepare every year. Every year I do these tiers. I go through the players. I try to stay on top of things. But then the last thing that I try to do every year is to do a mock draft. And I go through the motions of a mock draft at least once a year. I kind of get the bad picks and reaches out of your system. The problem with mock drafts is that many times you get guys who go in, make a pick or two, and then they bow out, and the computer ends up making the majority of their picks. You know, that screws it up for everybody, and it makes it so the experience isn't that great. And frankly, that's probably why a lot of guys don't do mock drafts. This past year, I did find what I think is a fantastic way to do a mock draft while potentially making some money in the process, and it's called MFL 10s. And maybe some of you already knew about this. I didn't get into it to gamble. I got into it, first of all, MFL short for My Fantasy League. And that's all one word, myfantasyleague.com. They feature something called MFL 10s. And My Fantasy League is a Fantasy League host site. And one of the things that they offer are leagues that users can take part of for as little as $10. And you can choose to run a team via best ball format, or you can select to draft a team that will be like any other team during the regular season with free agent moves and lineup changes. For me, I love the best ball format on these. Essentially, when you do a best ball MFL 10, you're doing a paid mock draft where each week your best lineup is automatically logged. You don't have to set anything. You don't have to do anything with it. There are no roster moves or starting lineups. You draft the best team you can, and then you let the chips ride from there. You know, the winner of the league, I think they get like $100, and I think their prizes for second and possibly third place. But the point is, you get a more serious crowd of draft partners in these leagues because some amount of money is at stake. And that's the key. You get guys that are a higher class of fantasy football player drafting against you, too. So you're learning more from this experience. So even when you make a mistake, you're learning about you're totally taking something away from that, and that's making you a better drafter for that coming season. So these are there are $10 leagues and higher if you want to put that kind of money into it and you're really into wagering. But for the purpose of what we're discussing, the $10 12-team league works wonders. There are other alternatives to MFL 10s. I know there's the Fantasy Football Players Championship where you can get in for as little as $35. Again, you can draft a best ball team and get the same type of serious mock draft experience while potentially earning money. And I just think that that's something that guys should consider as to whether or not for $10, you know, get in there and after you do a little bit of studying, get in there and give it a try. And see, you know, at least in a best ball format, try to see, you know, how's it playing out. I did one this year with a strategy of drafting Rob Gronkowski early. And I'm going to tell you right now, I didn't like it at all. The running backs went off the board so fast. I don't think I would do that again. Not in the first round, not in the early first round. You know, would I maybe take him at the end of the first round or something? Yeah, but what I learned is that the running backs just fall off the board so fast that you almost have to get a running back, well, at least one. You have to get like one running back in the first couple, three rounds, or else you're going to be in a lot of trouble because you're not going to be able to pick those running backs up later. So at the end of the day, I'm always fascinated at how different owners prep for drafts, and I'm always willing to share what works for me. Even if it's just a website that was mentioned that you didn't know about, I hope that you're able to take something out of this particular podcast, this two-part podcast, and use it to improve your own draft skills. Just absolutely love King for a Day, and I love fantasy football. Really enjoy hanging out with you guys. What else can I say? But I'm Rick Goreski. Want to thank you for joining me on the King for a Day podcast. Going to throw out some more wrestling music here. Going to tell you to tell me, who is this? If you guessed the Brood, you are correct, and you are obviously a wrestling fan. Gangrel, Edge, and Christian. That's how Edge and Christian broke into the WWE back in the Attitude Era. So that's the Brood. Take care, guys. We'll see you next time. The King for a Day podcast.